Hello, all my lovelies, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, my guest is truly formidable and she tells so many stories this week. Honestly, it kind of defies description. I can't even encapsulate this human being in one little intro like this, but I'm going to read a little bit from her website so you know what you're in for. Her website is nomadicare.org. And so from her website, it says, in 1994, Sass Carey, RN, traveled for the first time to Mongolia, where she discovered her life's passion, working with the nomadic people who inhabit the rugged landscape of that area. Drawing on her nursing background, she was first led to work with them in the area of healthcare, which was severely lacking. So she's worked with the nomads and the reindeer herders for over two decades and has a very close relationship with them. She founded Nomadicare in 2010 as a nonprofit in order to gather support and resources so she could continue her work in healthcare and documentation. Because she's created multiple documentary films about different aspects of the nomadic and reindeer herders' lives, but she's also written multiple books about them, about their lives, about their traditions, and especially about their shamanic practitioners. Sass shares multiple stories about those travels and those encounters with the nomads and with the reindeer herders. And this episode is so profound and so interesting. And I just was sitting on the edge of my seat while having my conversation with her. So without further ado, here is Sass Carey and my interview and conversation about her travels in Mongolia.
I had that happen once. Somebody, a shaman once sang my song for me. I didn't know it was my song. He sang it and I was just crying. And I said, that was the most beautiful song I ever heard. And he said, that's because it's your song. And I was like, oh.
I'm so curious, when you were shooting, I'm only bringing this up because, are you familiar with Molly Domasome?
No.
Okay. He wrote this gorgeous book called Of Water and the Spirit. It is just astonishing. And the short story is he was abducted when he was about 6 or 7 from his village in Africa and raised by Jesuit priests. And so he escaped when he was about 19, made his way back to the village on foot, and they wouldn't accept him because he hadn't gone through the initiation.
Sure.
And so he had to go through this initiation in which boys died because it was so rigorous. And so he says in the book, you know, I'm going to try my, he passed away last year. He's like, I'm going to try my hardest to explain what this initiation looked like and the places we went, because they're not here. They're not in this reality, but like words are not sufficient. So it was, he's written several books. They're all gorgeous. But one of the things he talked about was before he was born, the women, when his mother was heavily pregnant and about to give birth to him within a few weeks, they all went into the woods and they all started singing. And the village women came up with his individual song of him and who he was. And through that song kind of sang to the fetus and let the fetus know who was going to be, what the community was that was going to be receiving the baby and potentials for the baby's life, who the baby could be, which I thought was such a gorgeous and beautiful image. And I thought, oh my goodness, every baby should be welcomed into the world in that way. And so when you were talking about the movie you were making with the women, did they engage in that same?
No. One thing that happened was, you know, the Soviets kind of had their thumb on Mongolia from 1920 to 1990. And when I was making the movie, the Gobi Women's Song, it was just 2000. So they were all brought up in the Soviet time, and they had lost a lot of their culture, especially, well, the people in the Gobi had lost a lot of their culture, but that's why I was taking movies of up in the taiga, because they held on to their culture. I don't know if they did that they didn't do it to the baby. It was in a hospital, but they were all women. There was a woman doctor, a woman assistant, woman nurse, and us, three of us, translator and camera person and me. And we were the ones that were there for the whole birth. So, yeah, but that's amazing. I had that happen once. Somebody, a shaman once sang my song for me. I didn't know it was my song. He sang it and I was just crying. And I said, that was the most beautiful song I ever heard. And he said, that's because it's your song. And I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to talk about singing too and music. You know, this happened in 2000. I was teaching spiritual readings and how to connect to the spirit. And so every week I would just be in a place and people could come if they were interested. I didn't have the same people or anything. I just did whatever. I just winged it because that's all there is to do anyway. and so these three women came. I had never met any of them. And they all were in a very needy place in their lives. And they said, well, can you do this for us every week? And I said, well, I can't do it here. You can come to my house, but I'm not coming up to Burlington. So we started this thing and we did it for 3 years. And it turned out that at one point, one of them was kind of like choking, like she couldn't speak. And I put my hand on her neck and it turned out that she was supposed to let music through. And all three of them were beautiful singers. And they started singing. It was like coming from heaven. And they wrote and they sang songs. I was just thinking about this last night. I was telling my friend. It ended up that over the years that we went to people who were ready to go and they were maybe in a coma, ready to pass over. And we would just sing. But it was kind of like toning. Or sometimes one of them would have a special message that was so beautiful for the person. And it usually worked. But here's a funny story. My writing teacher, who I just love, she was the age of my mom. And she was really sick. And so I took my students and we all went into the hospital and we sang to her like that. And there was another woman in her room who was also really sick. And they were both, you couldn't tell who, if someone was going to leave, you know? So we sang this whole thing to Marge, this person, and she ended up leaving the hospital and living another year, but her roommate left. I mean, it's just amazing because you don't know. I mean, you're just not in control. That's the thing. I mean, we're not in control here on the planet. It's not our thing. You know, if we let it come through and do what we're supposed to do, that's a whole different thing.
I wanted to ask, I mean, I would assume, maybe I'm assuming too much, but was it a very large honor to be able to attend those ceremonies as a white Westerner?
You know, they do it more now because they know they're going to make a little money from it. But at that point, yes, it was a big honor. Like I went to Mongolia for, let me see. I went up to the taiga for 5 years before they invited me to come to a ceremony. And so it's sort of like I had to know them a little bit because it really wasn't for me. You know, they're shamans for their family and they're close people. So the other is almost like a show if they do it for Westerners. They were usually doing it for some kind of healing purpose, somebody that needed something or needed protection or their animals needed protection, or they did it each season. But to be allowed to go in, that's a big honor. I remember one time a few years ago, the son of one of the shamans that I used to know and the nephew, he's now the shaman and he's in his 20s. We got to his place and he said, well, there's this other family, this other tourist over here in that other orts who wants me to do a ceremony. But I said, I can't do it because it's not the right time of the month. And I said, okay, I don't think you should do it if it's not the right time. And he said, oh, no, Sass, you've come so far. We're going to do it. So he did a ceremony. And, you know, they couldn't get me because, you know, something you said in the beginning about how you feel about shamanism, just that you want to kind of understand it. That's how I am. I don't want them to do anything for me. I don't want to ask them any questions. I just want to see how someone else goes across the veil, you know, because I do that. And, you know, I do readings, spiritual readings, and connect with people's higher selves and things like that. I just wanted to see how other people did that. And I'm fascinated by it. So every single shaman that I met, I just thought that's what I was looking for. They'd always say, you don't have any questions? What is your question? I don't have any questions. I know how to connect and answer my own questions. Yeah. But sometimes they'd give me a message anyway, you know? Yeah. So yes, it is an honor.
It's a big honor. Think, you know, I just, maybe one of the reasons I'm so enchanted or enamored of, you know, shamanic healing, shamanic connection, shamanic conversation with the spirits and the world is because I think I hunger for that because, mm-hmm. you know, I know that to make this world a more beautiful place or to, you know, help another who is suffering or to reconcile someone's, I don't know, family or whatever kind of beautiful act can be brought into the world. I can't do it myself. Like I need the help of every spirit and angel that's out there. I mean, yeah. Tree spirit and, you know, maybe grass spirit or the river spirit. And there's also something really nourishing to my heart to know that I can be in close communion and I can have deep friendship with these other living beings and that they have just as much of a right to exist as I do. And that, you know, after I'm long gone, or maybe even the whole human race is long gone, they will still be here and they will mm-hmm. still be, you know, surviving, thriving and just eternally beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I think that's kind of where I'm coming from as far as with my kind of endless quest for, you know, reading every myth under the sun, trying to understand culture. And, you know, I also blame my parents because I grew up overseas. So it's like I just have this hunger.
Where did you grow up?
In Guyana in South America and then in Lahore in Pakistan.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, as a child, like you can imagine, I didn't get to see very much in either of those places because we were kept kind of sequestered away, but I would have to say, I was talking on a podcast the other day that the most beautiful place I've ever been is Kashmir because we got to spend a week on a houseboat there when they weren't fighting and at war for a brief. And I've never experienced such beauty in my entire life as Kashmir. It's like something out of some other reality, which, you know, I was 5 or 6 years old. And the fact that I can remember it so well, I think it was just this insane experience for my senses that just was forever imprinted.
Wow.
Me. So, you know, I have this hunger, I think, as you we're talking about for just finding new ways. I mean, I'm always looking for new friends, right? So why can't that friend be a river?
Sure.
There's no reason it can't be a river.
Right.
As long as it doesn't want to borrow any eggs, I'm okay with it.
Borrow any what?
Eggs.
Eggs?
Yeah. Like a neighbor coming over and saying, hey, do you have any eggs? And then you've got two eggs left and you think, ah, I should give these eggs to my neighbor because they need them. I don't really need them. Then I got to go to the store to get more eggs.
That's great.
I hope that you all enjoyed my conversation with Sass Carey. And I have to say that these interviews are really feeding my soul and my heart. And I hope that they're doing the very same for yours. I'm so grateful to Sass for agreeing to be on the podcast and for sharing about all the work she's doing and has done in Mongolia and the documentary films and books that she's created. I'm so grateful to her for preserving this way of life and for sharing that knowledge with all of us. To learn more about the work that she's done and that she's still doing, please do visit nomadicare.org. There will be a link in the episode show notes. And then check out some of the films that she's done and the books that she's written. The work that she's doing is so very important, and it's helping not only we who choose to check it out, but it's helping those who live in Mongolia, those nomads and the reindeer herders. She's helping to preserve a way of life, and she's helping to preserve knowledge of a way of life that is rapidly disappearing in that part of the world. I need to thank all of you for listening and for writing those ratings and leaving those reviews. They're so very important to me, and they help other people find us and find these stories of magic, these stories of miracles, these stories of ways of life that are happening all over the world. Please do consider checking out my YouTube channel. You can see my guests in all their glory telling their stories and find out a little bit more about them and who they are in the world. So thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Sass. Be open to the adventure. You never know when you travel in this world where it's going to take you, what kind of encounters you're going to have, what kind of fabulous stranger is just waiting to meet you. So be like Sass, be ready for the adventure, and when you find yourself in the middle of it, have faith and trust that this universe knows exactly where it's taking you. See you next week for another fabulous story, for another fabulous adventure, for another fabulous miracle. Because they're happening all around us to all sorts of people. And I have so many more amazing people that I can't wait for you to meet.